This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
And what a glorious weekend it was. Surprise! If you listened to this past Monday's episode of the Place to Be podcast, I told everyone that this week the main event was on hiatus. As I'm on vacation, probably, as you're listening to. Actually, as you are listening to this, I will be on vacation. I'll be in Punk's backyard grilling with AJ. But guess what? This is not really the main event. It is a glorious event. So I don't know if I'll actually make it one of the numbers. Well, by the time you're listening to this, it'll already be on placementnation.com, so maybe I did number it. Who the hell knows? Anyway, I figured I had a little slice to fit, a slice of life, if you will, to fit in a kind of an express episode of the main event, because I guess it's difficult to not talk about what happened this weekend in the borough. And actually, on this special episode, I only have one guest. He actually requested to be on, which doesn't happen that often. He is a contributor to, of course, placementnation.com. He is a veteran of Main Event. In fact, I still believe to this day he is the first he's the only non-Core 4 member. First non-Core 4 guest in Main Event history to be on back-to-back episodes. I think that was earlier this year. He was my former co-host of Extra Point and Sports Evolution, and he has got quite a bit to say because he was with me for half the weekend in the borough. The Doctor. Dr. G, George Urbelino. Was the last time you were on when Dusty died?
Yeah, I don't remember, but it's a glorious evening.
It is a glorious evening, but I know you were on. You were on a regular episode of Main Event, and then your man, the Dream, yeah, baby, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, passed away. And then I think you were on that episode as well, because Dusty was your boy. So I think that was the last time you were actually on Main Event.
You know what? When I'm on, it's like a WrestleMania Main Event.
You're like the Undertaker of Place to Be Nation. You only show up once a year and do your deed and then leave.
What it takes. Exactly. That's why they pay me the big bucks over here.
Doctor.
It's got an Undertaker Brock Lesnar contract. What are you?
Well, except you're not a douche. Well, no, I guess you are a douche, depending on your point of view. Anyway, it was a glorious weekend, and as we're recording, it's actually been a glorious first two episodes of Raw and SmackDown Live since, because unfortunately we had some tragedy, not a death or anything, but a health tragedy coming out of SummerSlam that switched things up on the red brand. And then, of course, we had to switch things up, and we already set for the next pay-per-view, which we'll preview on the next episode of Main Event. But this weekend, of course, was the big weekend in Brooklyn. NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2 was Saturday night, and then, of course, Sunday night was SummerSlam. And then Monday night, Raw emanated from the borough. So it's the only time of the year that WWE is in the same building 3 days in a row. And last year they made, I mean, we'll find out probably within the next couple weeks how much they made. Last year they made, over $1 million out of the 3 days. I'm sure they made close to that, if not slightly more than that. This year. And we'll know more of that probably in the coming couple weeks. Doctor, I was with you on Sunday in the fine suite, as we were last year for SummerSlam. You did not join us Saturday night for NXT, but that's okay. You did watch some of it on the network, I know. you've watched some NXT. What are your general observations of NXT as a brand and as a promotion that differs or is similar to WWE?
Well, you know, first of all, I obviously I'm biased because I'm from the borough, but they should do SummerSlam every year in Brooklyn because you don't get any better of a crowd. And I know we'll get into some of that about the whole belt thing later, but, you know, I have my opinion on that. But in terms of NXT, you know what I like about it? It's like you watch it – when you watch it on the network, it's usually in smaller arenas. It gives you kind of that old school, you know, like championship wrestling from Georgia feel, or, you know, like when you watch the territories, right. You know, like a territory feel, which is what right. I think Triple H was going for. But then it's like, you know, when they're in the takeover in Brooklyn, it's kind of like, okay, here's that one big show a year that the territories used to do. Let's bring them out and, you know, let's sell out a big arena and show what we could do. And I have to be honest with you, just from the little bit I saw on the network, I thought the crowd was just as hot, if not hotter, on Saturday than it was on Sunday.
It was pretty close, I have to say. We were sitting in the crowd on Saturday, myself, Double A, the Silverback there, and his friend Dan. We were in one section. Mr. D'Amato and Mr. Flanagan were in one section. And then the other gentleman, my PIC, Mr. Azzaro, Mr. Morissette, the Cowboy, Mr. Willie, who you and I may see this weekend, and Mr. Hool, Charlie, were in another section. So we were in different corners of Barclays on Saturday night, but it was irrelevant. The crowd was through the roof. There's no doubt about that.
They were, and you know, I mean, you had, you know, the great entrance by Nakamura, which I can't get that stupid song out of my head. Not a stupid song. I actually do like it.
We're going to end the show with it, so.
But you know, the one thing about, you know, what's great about those matches is, it's two different kind of things. I mean, obviously the matches seem to be more fast-paced in terms of, you know, the action. And I tell you, they put on a damn good show. I mean, they really do. Mm-hmm. I think maybe this year it's kind of sold me on. I'm not a big NXT watcher. But I have to be honest with you, it kind of gets me a little pumped up to turn on the network and put it on because those guys, you know, it's like they're fighting to get to the big shows, you know, to the big time.
Right.
But I'll tell you the truth, they put on a pretty damn good show.
They put on an incredible show. Yeah. Now, match for match, a lot of people thought last year's show might have been better. NXT TakeOver 1, which was highlighted by Kevin Owens and Finn Balor in their was it a steel cage or a ladder match? It was a ladder match. A ladder rematch. Finn Balor beat Kevin Owens in Tokyo in that Beast of the East pay-per-view last year on the 4th of July to win the NXT title. And then they had the rematch at NXT Brooklyn, which was pretty much Kevin Owens' like farewell match, even though he was already up in the Raw roster by then. This year, and of course, the big match last year, which tore the house down, was when Bayley defeated Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship, which was an unbelievable match, and blew the borough to pieces. This year, we had a pretty good show. Here is the card. We had two dark matches. Ty Dillinger, he's the 10-count guy. You'd like him, Jake. Defeated Wesley Blake, who was one half of Blake and Murphy, the former tag team champions. The Authors of Pain, which are those guys managed by Paul Ellering. Did you know that Precious Paul was back?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's his guys. Defeated TM61, which is Nick Miller and Shane Thorne. I'm not going to jump on the Authors of Pain bandwagon because I jumped on the Ascensions bandwagon, and we saw what happened when they went up to Raw. They became a bunch of fucking jobbers. So I'm not jumping on the Authors of Pain's bandwagon. Because you know me, I'm a mark for Haas tag teams, particularly Haas heel tag teams. But I'll bite my tongue. Then the main card, Austin Aries defeated No Way Jose by submission in 10 minutes and 42 seconds. Now, Austin Aries, of course, another one of my favorite guys, a former TNA graduate, an alum, one of many, one of a few couple on this show. We'll talk about the guy, my guy, in a minute. But No Way Jose.
It shows you if TNA had any any brains in that organization. It's they had some good guys, good workers down there.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because on a side note, when JR and I did our Survivor Series 06 vault on Monday, 2005 to like 2007, in terms of pure talent, TNA easily had the better roster than WWE. WWE was in like this weird, well, for those that haven't listened yet, check out our Vintage Vault for Survivor Series 2006, because WWE was in this like roided up, HGH'd up like douchebag mode. Their main event guys were assholes, taking liberties with the new guys. I mean, it was just scumbag city on that roster, in that company, and that goes all the way to Vince. Vince was in like complete utter sleazeball mode in 2006, but you want to hear the full skinny on that, check out our Vintage Vault. But in that same stretch, Dr. G, TNA actually had a pretty damn good roster, including the guy who had just arrived as we're doing our vault, Kurt Angle, who felt he was being misused in WWE, so he left and he debuted at Bound for Glory. Now, the problem there is Kurt had his own personal problems, and they were exacerbated in TNA because TNA didn't do any drug testing. That's another reason why he went to TNA. But that's TNA's problems, not WWE's. But these guys, as we got into the 2010, now remember, you and I were kind of paying attention to TNA when I actually, when I was writing the columns, the weekly write-ups for our old message board in 2013.
Right.
And the show wasn't horrendous, but it wasn't great either. And then you and I actually spent, I don't know what the fuck it was, $30. Remember, you came over and we actually watched that Bound for Glory, and I think I'd rather watch Snow Melt. That was that great main event. Bully Ray and AJ Styles, and the match was underwhelming. Only because Dixie Carter thinks she's Stephanie, and there's only one Stephanie. You can only be, there's only one queen bitch in this world.
That's true.
So, anyway. So all these guys eventually realized, you know what, TNA's a sinking ship. Even if I'm in even if I'm in NXT and I'm out in the big time, at least I'm A, getting paid pretty well, and B, I can really showcase my talents with younger guys. And that's why I think Austin Aries likes being here, and so are a couple other guys. No Way Jose, let's put it this way, Dr. G. No Way Jose is a guy right up Matt Rotella's alley, which tells you the kind of character he is. He has this crazy music, he walks down, and he's like, No Way Jose, No Way, and he like has like a fucking, you know, like the, what's that song? The one that Buster Poindexter, you know, you know, like the conga train or whatever, and he has a bunch of people behind him, and typical Matt Rotella, you know, silliness.
Oh yeah, that's definitely his.
That's definitely his fucking cup of tea. And it was a good match. Again, it was in 10:42. Austin Aries gets the win, but as he's beating down No Way Jose for like a post match beatdown, who makes his big return? But Hideo Itami, who had not we had not seen since the previous year when he was taken out and had surgery. That was that infamous moment where he was lying out in the parking lot outside Full Sail, and Kevin Owens walks by him and goes, "That's a shame."
I love Kevin Owens.
We never confirmed whether or not Kevin Owens actually attacked him or not, but he's back, and I think it looks like he'll be feuding with Austin Aries over time. I think the next takeover will probably be sometime in probably November, I would think. Then a women's battle. Ender Moon made her debut. And she defeated Billie Kay in 4 minutes and 35 seconds. That was the only match, including the pre-show matches, that were under 10 minutes. It was an okay match. The women's division on NXT, my personal opinion, is a little thin. And now it's even thinner. Now it's even thinner with Bayley having been called up. We'll get to her in a minute. But Ember Moon was very good. She's this, very good-looking African-American wrestler. She got these, like, red contact lens eyes, and she's got this crazy hair, and she does pretty good moves. She was a little sluggish in the beginning, but she picked it up in the end. She kind of does like a Stone Cold Stunner off the second rope. It's kind of neat, Dr. G. You got to see it. So she wins, and then the moment. Many consider it the second best entrance of the night. I'm a little partial. But we had the glorious NXT debut of the great Bobby Roode. And his entrance was fantastic. He was on a platform and has the awesome theme music.
Oh, yeah, that's all you right there.
Oh, yeah. Just as the entrance was playing, he was being lowered on a platform. Oh, you would have loved it. It was so fucking NWA. It was fantastic. And he's got the old school robe, and he's strutting down the ramp like Flair.
That
I'm like, this is a me guy. This is a Dr. G guy. He's got the robe with the studs on it, and he's doing the Flair strut. Bobby Roode is old school. And it's one reason why I'm starting to really – I mean, I've always loved TNA when I really got to start to watch it when the network launched. But the one thing I like about NXT now, and I want your thoughts on this, G, is that NXT is not just a whole roster of – and there's another example of this later in the show. It's not just a roster of flip-flopping indie guys who can do incredible things. And there are some great guys on this roster, incredible work rate guys. But there's also guys that are grinders and guys that are like veteran – you know, mat workers. They may not be like, you know, Nakamura guys or anything, or Atomies or anything like that, but or Neville's or, you know, Finn Balor's or anything like that. But you got to have these grinders, and you got to have these guys. And they mostly have to be heels.
Psychology guys.
Psychology guys.
Like Jake the Snake and Arn Anderson, that kind of.
Guys, yeah, guys who can dictate tempo in a match without having to throw their bodies all over the fucking place. And Bobby Roode's that kind of guy. He took on Andre Almas, and I was a little nervous as the match was going on because Almas was actually, Roode was showing a lot more ass than I thought he would, but Almas emptied out his offensive repertoire, and Roode would not go down. He did eventually beat him. Not crazy about his finisher. His finisher is a pump handle slam. As much as I love the pump handle slam, that's not really a finisher. This isn't 1992. He needs a better finisher. So maybe they'll talk. Maybe him and Triple H will talk about something cool. But that match was in 10-22. It was very good. And of course, Bobby Roode won. And I believe he's going to be your next number one contender. But we'll get to that in a minute.
And he's glorious.
And he's of course he is. Hello. Next up was maybe my favorite. It was definitely my favorite match of the night, and might be my second favorite match of the weekend. For the NXT Tag Team Championship, your champions, The Revival, the team of Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. Let me just put this in your head, Dr. G, The Revival. They are the 2016 version of Arn and Tully. They're professional dickheads who, they're like those kind of guys who will take the point of their elbow and jam it into your shoulder joint kind of thing. You know, guys like that, you know what I'm saying? They're not in great shape, you know, they're a little flabby. I mean, they're not fat, but they're not, you know, they're not chiseled. But they are an exceptional psychology-driven heel tag team.
And you need that.
And you definitely need that. And they took on two awesome workers, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. You'd like him. They call him the Sicilian psychopath. That's not you. You're more like the Napoli Don psychopath. But anyway. This match was 19-10 and maybe was the best match of the weekend. Only one match surpassed it for me, and that was the next night. But it was a fantastic match. Told an unbelievable story, back and forth and back and forth, and fighting on the outside. It was just, oh God, it was just an incredible match. And the Revival retained their championships. They're just so damn good. You got to watch them, Dr. G. You got to watch the Revival. They're just that old school NWA kind of world class style guys, and you need that. You need guys in that promotion that can counter the work rate driven guys.
Not every guy is going to be, the high flyers. I mean, you can't have, you need to have a balance.
Right.
A good roster.
By the way, the crowd, 15,671. It didn't look like a, let's put it this way, tickets wise, it was probably a sellout, but it wasn't a total sellout. I wouldn't say there was a bunch of, I mean, as I was perusing, there was maybe a grand total of maybe 40 empty chairs. 45 empty chairs, not a lot. There was a couple in our section that weren't filled, but nothing. I mean, it wasn't like at big sections. It was maybe like 50 seats, maybe. Any event, the Revival retained the NXT Tag Team Championships in a unbelievable friggin' match for me. Best match of the night for me, and second best match of the weekend. Next up, what many consider the farewell match for Bayley. She lost her NXT Women's Championship rematch to Asuka in 14:07 in a fantastic match again. I kind of like the way the match went.
I'll tell you, the crowd was really hot for that match and really hot for Bailey.
Yes. Well, Bailey's a favorite. If we see Steve Willey on Saturday, he'll let you know about the whole Bailey story. He loves her. He's a hugger. She was really, and because I think everyone knew that it was the end for her. She needs to be on one of the two shows. At the time, we didn't know which one. She needed to be on the main roster. But she lost to Asuka. So Asuka is still your women's champion. She's mysterious. She's got unbelievable kicks. She's pretty good. She's very, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not succinct. Not wasted motion. She's very, you know, she wrestles pretty tight. Pretty snug. You know, kicks and punches and she does some pretty good floppy stuff. But she's an incredible, she's a pretty good worker. And she is still your NXT Women's Champion. And finally, as we mentioned, we have a new NXT Champion. It is, in fact, Shinsuke Nakamura, complete with his unbelievable modern-day Undertaker entrance. Now, you and I, Dr. G, yesterday watched the entrance on YouTube. From beginning to end, when the guy started playing the violin to when the music ended and Samoa Joe's theme started, 5 minutes and 43 seconds. It's pretty long for an entrance. I don't think Taker's might be. He's the only guy whose entrance is probably that long. After a pretty good match, he defeats Samoa Joe in 21 minutes and 14 seconds to win the NXT Championship. Joe actually dislocated his jaw because Nakamura gave him a pretty stiff knee. I thought he broke it, but he actually dislocated it. Did you watch that match? Did you catch that match or no?
Yes, I did.
You did? What do you think of Nakamura? Because he's definitely a guy kind of out of your wheelhouse. What do you think? What do you think of him?
Well, I mean, the whole entrance thing is really cool. I think he's he's a good hand in the ring, and you know, Samoa Joe. There was some slow moments in the match.
It did take a little while. It did take a little while.
But I thought they did a pretty good job. I thought that the ring psychology was there, and Nakamura could, you know, he could go at it with the best of them. And, you know, Samoa Joe, I mean, you know, he definitely, you're going to see him on the main roster. He's a good heel. I don't think they should make him a face. I think he needs to be a heel.
Joe, I kind of agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I'd like to see.
I think he's a better heel, even, you know, his days in TNA, I thought he was a better heel.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I think he should be a heel as well. So there was NXT TakeOver 2, Brooklyn, New York 2. And
I love that entrance, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know me, that song's catchy, the violin player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a little strange the way he's always, like, dancing around. I call him, like, the Japanese prince, he reminds me of.
Well, he's got the same kind of... He wears the same outfit that Eddie Murphy wore in Delirious. But I think we'll see a Nakamura-Bobby Roode title feud soon. Oh, I think Joe will probably get his rematch at some point on probably a TV episode. And then I think we'll see him. I think we'll see him at the Rumble. Because don't forget, starting with Sunday night, all the big four pay-per-views are 4 hours, and they're all going to start at 7, and that includes Survivor Series. Which I'm curious to see how they're going to fill 4 hours for Survivor Series. So I'm curious to see how they will fill 4 hours at the Royal Rumble in January, because I'm not sure if I don't know if they'll add 10 guys and make it 40 again like they did in 2011, because that's when Del Rio won and he fought Edge at WrestleMania. So that was NXT TakeOver 2. Then the next night. Now, here's an interesting thing, Dr. G. What did I say? 15-671 on Saturday, 15-974 on Sunday. So only 300 more people. So it was easily, obviously, sell out. And I bet you sweets. Because I looked around. Now, our seats were across from where our suite is.
Right.
I should say your company suite, our suite. Who the fuck am I? Some hanger-on. But,
we know a lot of those.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, that's true, too. And the suites looked empty. So I bet you those extra, like, 300 people are at the suites. Because I don't think we saw, I don't think the suites were filled on Saturday night. So, of course, Sunday night was SummerSlam. My favorite pay-per-view, always has been. 4 hours. I think people were a little skeptical about the size of the card. It was 12 matches. 12 matches, including three on the pre-show. And it didn't seem long. I mean, we were at the bar. You couldn't make it. We were at the bar that JR and I mentioned, the great German bar. I think it was called KBH. On St. Mark. You know where St. Mark Street is?
Yep.
Yeah, it's on St. Mark Street in Brooklyn. For anybody who's in Brooklyn, if you're in the area near Barclays, let's say this fall you're going to a Nets game or an Islander game or a college hoop game or something, and you're looking for, you know, pretty good, cheap, and delicious food. I don't know if you'll like it, you know, kibasi and that kind of thing, but not bad. They got pretzels. I mean, they have brats. You like brats. But plenty of beer. More than enough beer. And let me tell you something, Dr. G. One thing you would have definitely liked was the German grapefruit beer.
I like beer.
The German grapefruit beer was unbelievable. I had three of them. It was delicious. So check it out. It's KBH, it's called, and it's on St. Mark's Street in Brooklyn. Anyway, we were there for a few hours right before the show, and then we went in, and the three dark matches, American Alpha, the Hype Brothers, and the Usos defeated Breezango, the Ascension, and the Vaudevillains. But, of course, if you were watching it, the match was 14-32. But the if you watched the pre-show match, you saw that the Usos kind of stole the pin from American Alpha. So I think you're kind of seeing a possible heel turn out of Jimmy and Jay, which is entirely necessary because they're ridiculously stale.
Yes, I agree.
Sami Zayn and Neville defeated the Dudleys in what may be the Dudleys' last match. Who knows? That was in 7:55. And then, as expected, because most of these scenarios, usually the heel wins first. Of course, the big storyline on Raw, a best-of-seven series going on right now between Sheamus and Cesaro. And as usual with best-of-seven series storylines, the heels always win first. So Sheamus got the win to go up one match to none. That was at 14:10. Then the show proper. Let me ask you something. Is 2 hours too long for a pre-show?
I think it's kind of long. I have to be honest.
I actually took the fan council poll. I don't mind 2 hours for WrestleMania, because WrestleMania is special. It deserves to be special. 2 hours for the other shows, even though they're four-hour pay-per-views, they're going to be four-hour pay-per-views, I don't really think you need 2 hours for SummerSlam or 2 hours for Survivor Series or 2 hours for the Rumble. I don't think that's necessary. Definitely 2 hours for WrestleMania. I think an hour for the other three are just fine.
No.
In any event,
WrestleMania is like a Super Bowl. Yes, I agree. You know, a two-hour pre-show, but not for the other.
No.
You know, not for SummerSlam or
the others.
You know, Survivor Series or what have you.
No, I don't think so either. All right. The opening match, Jericho. It's my guy. With an upset. There were a lot of upsets on this show. Very heel-heavy night. Probably because it was a very babyface-heavy night later. But Jericho, and Jericho and Kevin Owens beat Enzo Amore, that little twerp. And Big Cass in 12:08 in a pretty good match. Pretty solid. Guys bounced around. But at least people are finally starting to realize, all right, if everyone wants to think Enzo cuts a great promo, that's your prerogative. I think the guy's a fucking boob, and I think his promos are trash, but that's just me. And I don't think he's a very good wrestler at all. And at least a few people actually, like Steve Willey said to me, he goes, I agree with you. I don't think he brings much in the ring. Big Cass, love Big Cass. And you know what I think you should do. And of course, Big Cass got a big boost on Monday on Raw. We'll get to that in a minute. What do you think of Enzo and Cass?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I think that the WWE kind of dropped the ball on that. I think he kind of had to put over. I didn't know what was going to happen Monday. So before that, I thought that you should have put Enzo and Cass over there. I mean, everybody knew every word of what they were saying. You know, like they had a following, kind of like how New Day is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chance, you know, it's not going to kill Jericho and KO, but it could hurt. It could have hurt them. They're a good tag team for the tag team division. But now we saw a little turn of events on Monday. So Maybe they have other things in mind.
Right.
For Big Cass.
Well, I think Big Cass, I think that, well, we'll talk about Monday. We'll talk about what happened Monday night, because that, unfortunately, I think was a throw-off. So Jericho wins in what I thought was kind of an upset. I thought Jericho was going to eat the pin from one of the two, probably Cass, but instead Jericho.
I honestly thought that's what should have happened, but
I thought that's what everybody thought was going to happen, and it didn't. So Jericho got the win. Next up was the second title match of the evening, and guess what? Another upset. Charlotte regains the WWE Women's Championship. She defeated Sasha Banks in 13:51, which was a very, very physical match. And we found out afterwards that it was already determined that Sasha's going to take some R&R to kind of rest her body up. Her back is in tough shape. It's a little, you know, she's got some bumps and bruises. So they said, you know, you're going to have to drop the belt, take some time off, and we'll get you back in the groove soon. But I noticed something in that match, and it also came up in a couple matches later in the show. I think it's okay to say, and I'm curious in your thoughts on this, Dr. G. I understand that these younger guys really need to put themselves over, and girls, and women, put themselves over, but, yeah, these girls, these broads, but I think they're going a little too far. Sasha is going to be paralyzed if she doesn't chill out. She's a tremendous worker, but almost every one of her big moves involve landing on her head. And yeah, one time, she's going to land on her head wrong.
There were a few times in that match where it looked like they were just not in sync, or they were trying to do a move, and you know, maybe again because they were trying to be a little careful with Sasha. I don't know. It just, there seemed to be some dead moments in the match.
There was a couple of moments. There was a couple of moments where it looked like they botched a move or two. I thought
up on the turnbuckle there. It looked like they were trying to do. I don't know what they were trying to do.
Was another move earlier on where it looked like they were trying to do a backslide, but one of them was like too high and the other one's bad. I don't know. It looked like they were trying to do something that was actually physically impossible to do. So I'm hoping that all these guys on these rosters, and that includes all three of them, Raw, SmackDown Live, and NXT, I know you want to entertain us as fans, and we would love it, but please think about your future. All right? You don't want to turn into, you know, and I'm not saying this to be cruel. It's just a fact. I don't want you to turn into Draws, or I don't want you to turn into the Dynamite Kid. I mean, the Dynamite Kid had other issues besides throwing his body around. But you can entertain us without trying to kill yourselves. And as a fan, I'm telling you, you're all entertaining, you're all breaking your asses, and I thank you. But don't put yourself in the hospital for it. And a couple of times in that Charlotte-Sasha match, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Relax, girls. Get into like a... That's what I love about guys...
I'm surprised.
And that's what I love about... like the Revival and Bobby Roode and guys like that on NXT roster, and the same thing with the guys on this roster that are grounded and kind of grinding, and it's okay to not, you know, throw yourself around to the point where you're gonna, you know, get killed, you know. So yeah. Charlotte. I mean, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Know, that's the issue that the WWE is having right now, is keeping these guys healthy. I mean, every time they have a good plan in place, an injury happens, and then they're rewriting everything.
Right. And we'll get into the big injury. We'll get into the big injury in a minute. So there you go. Charlotte, the first two-time WWE Women's Champion. Next up, we had a real stinker. The first real stinker of the night. And I think everybody kind of knew it was a stinker, and that's why it was only 5:45. But The Miz retained his Intercontinental Championship, defeating Apollo Creed. Actually, it was Apollo Crews, but you know the big joke. In fact, if it was Carl Weathers, it probably would have been a better match. I have nothing against Apollo Crews. I think he's a good young talent. He's got a good look. He's got a great physique. He's just not ready. He's just not ready. And that match proved it. He had no psychology. There was no storytelling in the match. And that was a lot of what was missing on some of the matches Sunday night. Some psychology was missing. And I think a lot of these younger guys quite haven't gotten the psychology down yet. I don't know if Apollo Crews will go back to NXT or not. I know he was on SmackDown tonight. We're taping on Tuesday. I didn't get to watch SmackDown yet, but I know he was on. But he definitely was
the way they're booked too.
Right. Well, what do you mean?
It looked like they didn't really. I don't think it looked like they wanted him to get over last night.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. No, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I think that he just might have gotten pushed a little too fast. I thought the matches with Sheamus early in the summer, were not atrocious. But here was a case where I think they wanted a book so the fans could be happy. Hey, this young guy, we're trying to push youth. Young guy, Apollo Crews, getting a title shot. And then you realize, let's give him a little more time. So, and The Miz is a great heel. He's such a douche. And because he has a hot wife, and a lot of people don't think he deserves it. But anyway, The Miz retains his Intercontinental Championship. All right, next, easily my match of the night. And could very well be my match of the night, my match of the weekend. And I got to be honest with you, might be my early favorite for match of the year. AJ Styles and John Cena wrestle their rubber match. Their first match was at Money in the Bank. Styles won. Their second match, technically, was the six-man at Battleground, which Cena's team won, and Cena pinned AJ. Here was the rubber match. Anybody can say what they want about John Cena. They think his gimmick is dopey. They hate his jorts. They hate the sneakers. They hate the ugly fucking t-shirts. But I'm finally going to admit, well, not finally, I've admitted this for a couple years now. He's not a terrible wrestler. As a matter of fact, he's a pretty damn good wrestler. And I don't want to hear, oh, AJ elevated him. Cut the shit. We're not talking about, you know, he wrestled, they, you know, it's not like AJ wrestled fucking Typhoon, you know, or Bam Bam Bigelow or something. I mean, he wrestled John Cena, who's not chop liver. This isn't John Cena 2005, okay? The guy knows how to wrestle, and he knows psychology.
I think John Cena does a good job. He always shows up for the big matches.
Yeah, he does. He does.
And don't get me wrong, he was in there with a good hand, but it wasn't like AJ carried the whole match.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm getting a little older. Was I always a Cena fan? No. I never disliked him as a wrestler, but at times, the poop jokes and the, you know, fruity pebble underwear or whatever the fucking joke, Rock was annoying during that stretch anyway, but some of that annoyed me. The t-shirts are fucking hideous, but I would never buy any of them. There were a couple I would have bought if I had the money at the time. A couple. In fact, my buddy Glenn Butler, wore one of my favorites, and that was the 8-bit one that looked like the front of the old Nintendo video games or Atari or whatever. I think it was Nintendo.
How do you not love the Pabst Blue?
Oh, the PBR one I like. I was getting to that. I like the PBR one. I liked it.
How about
it,
the one with the U.S. Championship belt on it that we got my daughter? I love that.
That's all right. I did like the one. I did like the one he had that was modeled after the AWA logo. I thought that shirt was kind of cool. But then he had others that were like fucking purple, and there was some orange, and there was a bright yellow, and some of them were just brutal. Any event. John Cena is a good wrestler. The guy's experienced, and I think finally we could stop screwing around with him. AJ Styles is a tremendous wrestler, and for a guy who's almost 39 years old, he might be wrestling better than he's ever wrestled in his life. And apparently he put on another gem tonight on SmackDown Live. The guy is an incredible worker.
He is.
But John Cena has now admitted that he's a part-timer. And, of course, we saw the symbolic moment. The symbolic moment where he put the headband, you know, the headband he puts on his bicep, hustle, loyalty, respect. Or never give up. Whatever it says. One of the two. I don't remember which is
which. Never give up, yeah.
I think it's never give up. Puts it on the ring, leaves it on the ring, walks up the ramp, looks at everybody, and walks off. Great ending. Great moment. Let me ask you this, Dr. G. If you were rebooking this show, not knowing, let's say you didn't know that these two were going to put on what they put on, would you put that match on last? Instead of what we ended up having last.
Oh, well, yes. I definitely would have.
We'll get into the main event
in a little bit. You know why I would have put it on last, and people may disagree, and we'll see what people say on the boards and all that. Because if you really are truly want to start passing the torch, if they want Cena to kind of pass the torch onto someone, you need to make that the highlight match of the night. If it's truly where he is going to be a part timer and he's going to, you know, listen, they got to start passing that torch off. And we've been saying for years we don't know who that person could be. Well, AJ Styles could be that person. Now, granted, AJ Styles is about the same age as John Cena, but John Cena's, you know, got his hands in a lot other things outside the WWE. Even though I think he'll be more loyal to the WWE than Rock has been over the years, but I think that match easily could have been last. Just AJ Styles versus John Cena. I think I would have no problem with that headlining that show.
Mm-hmm.
Now again, we didn't realize how great the match was going to be.
Right. No, I didn't either. I didn't either. I knew it was going to be really good. I didn't think it was going to be that good. It was better than their Money in the Bank match.
I definitely knew it was going to be better than Brock and Randy Orton.
We'll get to that in a minute. Ending. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. We have plenty of time to dig into that.
Well, I'm just saying is that going on the name of the match. I'm not talking about what happened in this specific match.
Right. No, I know.
You know where they are in the car. I definitely would. I would have had no problem with it being the last match
right.
of the evening.
I've kind of lost my. One thing that I was always, a purist, being a fan as long as you and I have been, I used to always say, title match has to be on last. I don't really care about that anymore. There's so many fucking belts anyway. The most compelling storyline should be last. Belt or no belt. But in any event, AJ Styles wins a rubber match, and then he gets just desserts tonight on SmackDown. We'll get to that in a minute. Next up, kind of like the back end of the show now. Like, I was comparing it to people that, like, there was a kid on the, oh my God, this tells you how old I am, Dr. G. We're sitting in the subway. Well, you were sitting with me when I said, oh, it reminds me a lot of SummerSlam 89. And the kid goes, I've never seen it. I wanted to fucking jump off the subway while it was moving. but anyway, because I felt, for you guys that know the show, to me, AJ and Cena was like Rude and Warrior at SummerSlam 89. And then the second half of the show kind of went, the next match, the New Day, your tag team champions on Raw, WWE tag team champions, took on the Club, Luke Gallows, and my man Carl Machine Gun Anderson. Ended in a DQ in 909. That dope John Stewart was with him. It was all right. Big E returned after being out for a couple weeks, suffering from ring postitis. I think the Club should continue the storyline of keeping guys' testicles in their jars. I think that's actually pretty funny. Match wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. It was all right.
Yeah, nothing to write home about.
Nothing to write home about. It was average. But New Day does retain the tag team titles. A lot of people thought the Club was going to beat them. So. Next up, we had the WWE World Championship, a.k.a. the SmackDown belt. Your champion, Dean Ambrose, defeated Dolph Ziggler in 15-18. I got to tell you. Unlike John Cena, the three biggest spotlight matches for Dean Ambrose this year, WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar, Extreme Rules against Chris Jericho, and here, he went 0-3. All three of those matches against non-Shield guys, kind of like the Click. What's missing, Dr. G? Do you think?
It's funny because, you know, Stone Cold kind of like, I wouldn't say called him out, but like, you know, come on, I want to see you, you know, be the man. And this was his opportunity to really shine here. And there's just something missing. Like, it just seems like there's, the guys he's with, there's like not a chemistry or, I don't know, the psychology. It's weird. It was boring. I have to say, I was bored during this match.
Yeah.
I was disappointed. I wanted, and I like Ambrose, but I just didn't see any. there was just – it just didn't seem like there was any chemistry between Ziggler and Ambrose. I just
mm-hmm. – Well, you can also say
what
that
– What did you see was missing? What do you feel was
missing? Dean has this you know, this personality or this gimmick that he's a nut job and he's a whack job, but – It doesn't come off in his matches. His matches are too standard. And his character is not standard.
Right.
So I feel like he needs to
a little bit more off, you know, kind of like a lunatic.
Kind of like how Piper used to wrestle.
Right.
You know?
He's not vicious when you want him to be vicious.
Yeah,
know?
He wrestles
he
too
needs to be a little out of control.
Yeah, he wrestles too standard. He needs to be unpredictable. If his gimmick and his personality is to be unpredictable, his matches need to be a little more unpredictable, and they're not. I think that's his problem. Dolph Ziggler rebounded after losing that stinker. I guess he had a great match on Tuesday night. We'll get to that in a second. So Dean Ambrose is still your WWE World Champion. That's how they took the heavyweight out of it. It's just WWE World Championship. It's kind of like back in the Hogan days, right after he won it, when they got rid of the World Heavyweight, and it was just WWF World Champion. Next up, we had the 6-woman tag team match. Natalya, Alexa Bliss, and a mystery partner taking on Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Carmella. Now, it was originally supposed to be Eva Marie, but she got pinched by the wellness policy. She was replaced by the returning Nikki Bella. And the heels won the match in 11:07, which was another shock, and Carmella got pinned. So that was kind of a surprise. But it was the 6-women match, and that's that. So, and that's all the women on SmackDown. Next up, we had, here it is, our first ever WWE Universal Championship match between Seth Rollins, who got the title shot because he was the one not pinned in the triple threat at Battleground, and Finn Balor, who won a mini tournament to decide, it was the first official new Raw. Where he defeated, I forgot who he won it, beat in the first match. I think it was Jericho. I might be wrong. But then he beat Roman Reigns to get this title shot. But before they did that, out was the Raw bosses, Commissioner Stephanie McMahon, General Manager Mick Foley, dressed in his, I don't know what the fuck he was wearing, his meatloaf men's blouse, or that stupid thing. Well, look at you, he was supposed to serve me tea or something. And then they unveiled, Dr. G, the brand new WWE Universal Championship belt. And that is when hell froze over. And this is where we'll get into crowds. When I first saw the belt, I fucking hated it. Not so much for the red leather, but for the fact that I was hoping for something different looking from the WWE World Championship belt on SmackDown, the belt held by Dean Ambrose. It is the exact same belt, except everything is red. The leather's red, the plate, the center plate is red, but everything else is the same. Anything on Dean's belt that's black, that belt is red. And at first glance, I fucking hated it. I'll get into it. It was not good.
Boring.
The crowd shit all over it. Then the match started. And the first, you know, few couple minutes were a little slow. Most matches on Sunday night started that way, but all of them picked up eventually. Same thing here. The match was tremendous. 19 minutes and 24 seconds. And it was really good after a while. But here's the problem. And I know you're going to argue this, but I've got an interesting point, and I don't want you to take... Well, let's put it this way. Here's the problem. You had two expert guys in the ring. Two guys everybody likes. It wasn't exactly Cena and fucking Roman Reigns. It was two guys everybody likes. They like Seth Rollins, except you, and everybody loves Finn Balor. This was the moment everybody wanted. Yet every time the belt was on camera, everybody booed. And then they started doing these dopey belt chants. So for the first, like, 8 minutes of the match, I don't think anybody was paying attention to what was going on in the ring. It was all about the stupid belt. And for the first time in my life, for the first time since the building opened, I was a little disappointed in the Brooklyn crowd. Now, here's my one point, and then I'll let you go on your rant, because I know you for the most part,
I'm not
going to
really rant.
But here's my point. Don't take it personally that I'm just slamming Brooklyn. Because ever since, this is another topic, and I'm going to get into this on the next, I might get into this on a future main event. Because everyone knows, if you've been listening to the show.
It's going to happen in any WWE arena.
Exactly. So. Here's the thing about WWE crowds right now. Here's the thing. Ever since early 2014 with the whole Daniel Bryan and the crowd trying to flip the main event and flip, you know, because let's be honest, the original main event of WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans was Randy Orton and Batista. The crowd pretty much willed WWE to switch things up and create a storyline to add Daniel Bryan to the title match, although he did have to beat Triple H first at WrestleMania 30, and that match ended up being pretty damn awesome. And then the main event was very good, and Daniel Bryan won the belts. From that point forward, I almost think WWE crowds now would rather put themselves over instead of the product. That I'm not a fan of. I'm not showing up to events to watch the other 15 people act like shitbags. I'm there to watch the product. I'm there to watch the wrestlers. I'm not there to watch a bunch of fucking mouth-breathing douchebags chanting over a fucking belt for 10 minutes. It's not what I'm there for. I'm there to watch the wrestling. So doctor, I'm not slamming just Brooklyn. We're just unfortunately using Brooklyn as an example because they stuck their necks out and did it first. I'm not saying you can't cheer for what you want. But if you're going in there with the expressed intention of being a dick, then you're wrong.
Well, the thing is that, okay, I agree with you on a lot of these points, but the point is that nobody knew what the belt was going to look like. So it wasn't like they went in going, oh, well, no matter what this belt's going to look like, I'm gonna boo it. Now, the thing is, I agree with you. I think that the fans think that now, because of what happened in 2014, that they could influence the WWE's decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess all along we've always influenced the WWE's decisions. It's just sometimes maybe we influence them a little quicker, which is what happened in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I look at these things in these articles and people, it's like, get over it. Who cares? The crowd was into it. If that's what they want to do, they're not saying that they cheered when he won. They're not saying, oh, we cared about the belt more than the match, but they're voicing their displeasure over the belt. So you kind of, you know what? Then you make a part of the storyline like they do everything else.
Well, it's funny you say that because today I was watching Raw, and when Seth Rollins got in the ring, he's like, look at that. And Seth Rollins slammed the Brooklyn crowd on Twitter last night.
Yes, I know he did.
And he goes in the ring and goes, look at this gorgeous, beautiful, well put together title belt. So he actually trolled the belt, which is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Like I said, it had nothing to do with Brooklyn or whatever. Maybe it irked some people. It didn't irk me. I see people. I think sometimes, no offense, but I think some of you guys take it too seriously. You take yourselves too seriously. It's like, if people want to boo the belt, then they want to do. Listen, the whole thing with the Hall of Fame, I agree with you. When we complained about that,
I could be very
that's
specific.
Different. That's a different event. You have people coming out, and you know, this is not, it's not all kayfabe.
It's not a show. It's also not a wrestling show. It's
exactly.
An award ceremony. It's not, there's no ring.
So that, I totally agree with you because I was annoyed that night. But when it comes to the wrestling, get over yourselves. If people want to boo the freaking belt, let them boo it. Who cares?
There's also a moment, though, when Finn Balor won the match, which is what everybody fucking wanted, and you were a witness to this. I'm not making it up, and you can go on the network and prove it. When he was handed the belt, they booed.
They cheered him when he won, but yes, they
booed. But then they booed the belt when they handed it to him. For Christ's sakes, it's been half an hour.
What's the big deal? I don't.
Because
I don't,
it's dumb. It's fucking dumb. Because
you say it's dumb. And,
but you're disrespecting the winner of the match by giving more of a shit over the belt? What are you, 10? And 10-year-olds don't even give a shit about the belt. I don't know, that bugged me because...
If you're going to sit there and criticize all these things, then you might as well just criticize everything that happens at a wrestling show. Listen, you're going to have fans, some fans, you heard it all night that night. I mean, there's certain cheers going around. But I don't know, to me, we don't pay to come see the fans, but the fans do make the show. If you don't, you know, you, listen, how many times could you turn on a match? And I know, like, you know, like, with all due respect, I know Chad likes and everything. You will put on a Japanese match and you want to just fall asleep because that crowd is so boring. Meanwhile, these people are putting on a show that, like, we don't even see a lot of times here in America. I think, you know, the crowd is your, you know, just even in any kind of sport. It's your extra man on the field, and it makes the event. I think people make too big of a deal of it. I just think people sometimes take themselves too seriously and realize that, you know what, you're not always going to get what you when you feel. Listen, if you felt that the belt shouldn't be booed, you didn't boo it. So that's your deal. But you did boo it when it first was shown.
Yeah, and then I got over it after 45 seconds. That's the difference. But in any event... Finn Balor.
I think people were disappointed. And some people, you know, listen, it wasn't the whole crowd that was.
No, it really wasn't. But I got more on the belt in a minute. But here's the big story, of course, from this match. About, I don't know, probably 2.5-3 minutes in, another move that I think should be banned, and I think another move that is too dangerous and too precarious that he should stop doing it. Seth Rollins did that barricade powerbomb. Finn Balor was trying to kind of cushion it a little bit, landed funny, and tore his labrum in his right shoulder. He also dislocated his shoulder. You know what that son of a bitch did? He pulled a Bret Hart. He fucking popped the thing right back in. That's a man right there.
I've done that before.
That's a man right there, I'll tell you. I snapped your fucking shoulder once.
Well, you actually kind of did it.
Well, I did. I don't know how, but I did the Miyagi thing. I don't know. By the way, he did it. What were you doing? You were diving for a fly ball, weren't you? And then you land on it running?
Yeah, softball, yeah.
That's right. You were playing softball. You landed on it running. And we'll get more into Finn Balor, what happened. But he is the first inaugural Universal Heavyweight Champion, or Universal Champion, whatever the fuck it's called. All right. Then, of course, the main event, the last match, which I don't know if I would have made it. We talked on main event here and on the boards and stuff and on PlacementNation.com that I don't know if anybody expected this match to be last. But Brock Lesnar took on Randy Orton. The match went 11 minutes and 45 seconds. The first, like, 9 minutes of it was not bad. It was kind of a sloppy. One thing about Brock Lesnar, you're not going to get anything pretty. Brock Lesnar's matches are bowling shoe fist fights. They're not pretty. He's not there to pretty you up. You're lucky he's fucking there. So, But the last, like, 2 minutes, after Orton kicked out of the F5, suddenly Brock takes off his gloves and starts fucking potatoing Orton. He elbows him in the forehead, bleeds all over the fucking place, and they end the match by TKO, and Brock wins. So
now,
Orton...
I will say this, the build-up for the match, when they show all the video and...
Right.
And, and over the weeks, excellent. I mean... It makes you really want to see these two go at it. But the way they booked the match, I mean, all right. I understand that if you look at the two, you're like, oh, my God, Brock Lesnar is going to kill Randy Orton. Not that Randy Orton is any kind of slouch, don't get me wrong. But really, I mean, I didn't understand the booking
of what they were doing. Why, if you wanted Orton to lose, you make him lose like that. I mean, this, I didn't understand the booking of the match at all. I really didn't. And, you know, obviously we didn't know what was going on. We've heard a lot of things that Orton, this was part of the plan. Some people thought that he was taking liberties because Randy Orton kind of called him out about the PED use.
And then you could tell early on in the match he was kind of sandbagging the suplexes. He was kind of like dead weighting them. It was pretty evident, but I don't know if he meant
but
to
I don't,
do it.
Or... You know, the thing is that unless you get something from the inside, we really don't know how this was planned and booked ahead of time. Was Randy Orton supposed to not really take the suplexes? Kind of, it was that part of the storyline. I have no idea. It was disappointing. It really was, because there was so much more potential for that match, and I just totally out and out despise Brock Lesnar. I really don't.
You're not the only one.
I think he is a piece of crap. I mean, he has no charisma at all. He don't care. He has no passion. I mean, could you imagine if this guy actually really had a passion? How dangerous this guy would be.
My problem with Brock,
and honestly, he's lost some big matches in the UFC because I just don't think he gives a fuck.
My problem with Brock Lesnar right now is, his matches don't do anything for me anymore. They're not moving any meters. I think the juice is out. I think the juice is run
what's
out.
What's the fascination with him? I mean, is he putting any more fannies in the seats? He's not there half the time anyway. So it's just a Vince thing.
And it's obviously pissing off. Yeah, it's obviously pissing off the backstage because after the match, as if anyone knows, there was a confrontation between Lesnar and Chris Jericho.
Jericho, you know what? I'm not a big Chris Jericho fan, but you know what? I think he's earned a little more respect in my book.
Yeah. No, he did for me too. Meltzer says that Jericho called the match, the main event, bullshit and questioned producer Michael Hayes about it. Lesnar confronted Jericho. The two exchanged words and tangled up against a wall before Triple H and McMahon and Vince broke up the situation, with McMahon stating that the ending was planned. And apparently Randy Orton said to Jericho, yeah, we had the match planned that way.
Did you see? I saw one place I thought I read, because I read so much about this, that he was kind of egging Jericho on, and he was like, he kissed like Jericho's forehead or like with his hand or something, like Jericho kept going at him, and he was kind of like, you're a little pussy.
He said, hit me or punch me or kiss me, or I don't know what the fuck it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
My issue with Brock Lesnar is 15,976 people came to Barclays. If Brock Lesnar was not on this card, would it still have been a sellout?
Yes.
Yeah, it would have been. That's the difference. I don't think he moves meters anymore. Just my opinion. Regardless of whether he's a fucking mercenary douchebag or not, he just doesn't move meters anymore for me. I don't know if he adds to cards anymore.
No, he really doesn't. And the thing is that he doesn't even bring anything to the storyline. You know what I'm saying? It's like he just looks disinterested.
Yeah, he really
all
does.
The time.
But right now,
and
I don't know
if he didn't have Paul Heyman, it would really be.
I don't know if he'll come back for WrestleMania. If they start a storyline with him for WrestleMania 30. Fucking number are we on now? 33 next year in Orlando. Who's left? Really, who's left? Now, we all know that before they went off the air Sunday night, he F5'd Shane. Do we really want to see fucking Brock and Shane? Absolutely not.
No.
We barely wanted to watch Brock and Shane and Taker. We really want to watch Shane and Brock? What's compelling in that match? That Shane doesn't get fucking killed?
I enjoyed Shane and Taker, though, to be honest. So.
I mean, I didn't hate it. It probably went a little too long, though. But anyway, the point is, in my opinion, he's just not moving meters anymore. He's not moving meters. He's not adding anything to these cards. WrestleMania is still a sellout. SummerSlam is still a sellout. Why do you got to call? Why do you got to have all the add all this fucking drama? You know what I mean? Why add all this drama?
I'm over him.
Just my opinion.
I can't take looking at his face. I tell you the truth, I'm ready to get in the ring.
Hit me up. By the way, hit us. Hit the show up on Twitter. You can go on my Twitter at Scott Criscolo, and give me your opinions because this is kind of an off the cuff main event. And I'm gonna start pimping the Twitter a little bit more at Scott Criscolo, and you know, give me your opinions on Brock Lesnar. Do you care anymore? Does he do anything for you? If he does, great. No issues with that at all.
I would love to. I you know what? If there's somebody out there that could defend him, boy, they better come up with some good reasons because I just.
But I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion. People maybe love the red belt. Good for them. Now, that was SummerSlam. Overall, I had a blast. Love being with our crew. Myself, you.
Oh yeah.
Double A, Steve Willey, JR. Let me make sure I get everybody. D'Amato, the Silverback, Charlie, Cowboy, Mr. Flanagan, Mr. Eller. Met Mike Eller for the first time. It's good to see Mike. Who was left? Am I forgetting anybody? Shit. I knew I was going to do this.
I don't know. You said so many names, I lost
track. Fuck. Let me go again. JR, Andy, Cowboy, Charlie, Willie, you, me, Double A, Rotella, D'Amato. No, that's everybody. That's 10. And Mike Eller, 11. And some of the guys we met, and of course the usuals, those that we hung out with at the bar that didn't sit with us, like Glennie Bunn and Boyce and Ryan Everett. It's good to see him. And I think it's his wife. Did you say they were married? Or are they just going out? I think they're married. In any event, his girlfriend / either girlfriend or wife. I'm pretty sure they're married. But she was fantastic. She was actually talking to us about Chicago. She said it's a great great town. We're going to have a good time. She says, "Don't never go to Iowa." That's what she said. Don't drive through Iowa.
It's like, Mike, the town,
so
Chicago.
I told. Speaking of heel tag teams, I said you and I should wear T-shirts when we walk into Geno's or one of those fucking shitbag pizza joints. Mine should say New Haven Pizza. Yours should say New York Pizza. And we should walk in and look at the owner and go, "What do you got? What do you got?" I mean, you're looking at the world tag team champions of pizza right here. What the fuck are you going to do? What could you do? You know what I'm saying?
You can't even classify those pizza.
I know, really. It should be like those Razor Ramon vignettes where he fucking threw the plate back in the guy's face. What do you think? All right. So here are the repercussions from SummerSlam that came up this week on Raw and SmackDown. SmackDown really didn't have any major issues. The big issues were on Raw because, as I mentioned, Finn Balor tore his labrum. So he unfortunately had to relinquish the Universal Championship. He had to give it to Mick Foley at the beginning of Raw Monday night, which was sad. It was kind of like Batista in 2006 when he had to give up the World Heavyweight title.
Yeah,
he,
I think they got to get rid of that move a little bit for now.
Yeah, I don't like either of them because I don't like either of those power bombs. The one he does in the barricade, the one he does on the one he did on the turnbuckle almost paralyzed Sting back at Night of Champions. I know Sting's not, 20 years old, but still. In any event, but I had to say this, JR, Dr. G. I'll say this to JR, too. When Finn was walking up the ramp, now, when the bell was just sitting on a table the night before, I wasn't crazy about it. When he was carrying it to the ring over his shoulder, I'm not going to lie, it didn't look that bad. But I found something, and I'm going to give credit to Core 4 member Jordan Duncan for this one. He thinks that
have an intervention.
No, listen though. Excuse me. He said that take the plate. The red leather is not the problem. The red leather is fine. As I was talking to you in the car, we've had great red
leather. I have no problems with
one of my favorite belts. One of my favorite belts of all time, one of your favorite belts of all time, the NWA World Television Championship belt, like the one that goes back to 85, 86 with Arn and Dusty, and I think even Austin, our boy Stunning Steve had it in like 91. That had red leather. Now that belt was fucking sweet, but the difference was the plate was silver. The plate looked like a normal belt. The leather made it look special. The problem with this belt is the plate, the center plate has red in it, and it looks like a toy. If the center plate still was black, like a Dean's belt on SmackDown, yet the leather is red, then that belt would be very sharp. But the red
I just don't like the look of that.
The red in the well. Here's the problem. Here's the other thing.
To begin with.
Well, here's the other thing, and we were having a discussion today. We had a great discussion in our chats thread about. We were talking about 2006, 07, 08, because we were talking about where JR and I are in our vintage vaults. And we're talking about, like, the era, like, the late 2000s and where the company was. And JR made a good point. He said, by the end of 2009 into early 2010, WWE had the brand as its star. They became very corporate. A lot of it had to do with when Linda ran for Senate. So things had to get a little antiseptic. A lot of it changed in late 07, early 08 after the whole Benoit debacle. And that logo is their life. And I feel like that's why the belts all have this universal look now. That no pun intended. That's why both main belts look like that. That's why the women's belt on Raw looks like that. And apparently that's what the women's belt on SmackDown is going to look like as well. And
from a business point of view, I understand what they're doing, but you know, us as wrestling fans, we want, like, you know, remember the big gold belt? That just looked like a world title.
Oh, of course
that
it did. Looked like, of course
like
it did.
The shit. That's what you wanted to
of
win.
Of course
that
it did.
Was, you know, or the old 10 pounds of gold. You know,
absolutely.
The original NWA. There was just something about it. But these belts, it's like, yeah, let me go to the toy store and buy a, you know, toy belt. That's what it looks like to me.
All right. I think the belt would look better if the center plate didn't have red in the background and it had black, but the leather stayed red.
If they had just a whole different, you know, the center plate at all without that big W, I mean, it looks like they're not going to go away from that.
So, no, I don't think they are. You're going to
on that, but
no, we're going to
just
deal with it.
They could have created some kind of belt, you know, that fit the universal moniker. You know, and I'm not sure what that would be, but
right.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I do. I do. So Finn Balor had to relinquish the belt. So they had three matches on Monday night. What they decided was Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon decided that they were going to have a fatal four-way. Seth Rollins was already slated in because A, he's the heel, and, you know, Stephanie likes him because, you know, authority stuff. Plus, he was the other one in the match. So it's going to be Seth Rollins and three other guys in a fatal four-way this coming Monday on Raw from, I think they're in Houston this Monday, to determine the new Universal Champion. The other three guys are, after the matches, Kevin Owens, who beat Sami Zayn. Seth Rollins beat Sami Zayn, my bad. Seth Rollins beat Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens beat Neville. Big Cass beat Rusev when Rusev bowed out because of his injuries. Oh, by the way, we didn't mention at SummerSlam that the U.S. title match between Rusev and Roman Reigns never happened because they brawled outside and then the match just never happened. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
Rusev just took the count out. So Big Cass is in the is in the four-way. And Roman Reigns defeated Jericho in the last match. So the fatal four-way this Monday, coming Monday on Raw, is Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, Big Cass, and Roman Reigns. And the winner will be the new Universal Champion. Also, Charlotte came out, cut a promo. She's the new women's champion. And then Foley came out and announced that Bayley was making her big debut. And she is going to be the new big baby face because Sasha Banks is probably out for 2 months to rehab, you know, her aches and pains in her back and stuff like that. As for Finn Balor, this is an interesting thing. There's been various reports on length of injury. We're not sure whether it's, you know, I was going to take a break, but we've been on a roll. I decided not to. I just realized that, but we were going a few minutes longer than I thought, but that's all right.
Yeah, there goes my salary now.
Fuck it. It's my show. I do whatever the fuck I want. PlaceBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. It's an awesome site. Check it out. There you go. I don't need to say anything else because our site's great. A lot of reports have come around on how long Finn Balor is going to be out. A torn labrum is nothing to sneeze at. Some have said 3 months. Some have said 6 months. WWE is officially saying 6 months, but for some people were going back and forth with me today in a good way, good debate. They really do think he's out 6 months. I think this is the, quote, John Cena injury length. Because I always thought they overdid Cena's recovery time because they like big pops when he came back early. Case in point, when he tore his pec muscle right before No Mercy 2007, they said he was going to be out a year. He came back at the Rumble 4 months later. They say, officially, WWE is saying Finn Balor will be back in February. I think he'll be back in November. And I think he'll win. He's eventually going to get the belt back. But
you heard it right here, folks.
So I think it's... JR disagreed with me. He thinks it's a legit 6 months. And it might be. It might be. But I have a feeling that I think they're overstating the 6 months a little bit. But that's just me. I want to see him come back because I love Finn Balor. His entrance is just as badass, and he's a great wrestler. He just landed funny on a move that I really think is unnecessary. It needs to go. Seth Rollins can win matches and have good matches without needing to do these dopey power bombs. Any event, there you go. Now, tonight on SmackDown, I guess AJ Styles became number one contender, and then he defeated Dolph Ziggler in apparently a fucking amazing match from what people are saying in some chats and online. I'll watch it tomorrow. It's too late for me right now. Maybe I'll watch it tomorrow. And it was tremendous. So, Backlash, which is the next pay-per-view, which will be coming up on September 11th, Sunday, from the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. There you go, JR. Or, I did it to you again.
What?
Dr. G, Richmond, old school NWA haunt. But that's where the next pay-per-view will be. It's a SmackDown pay-per-view, Sunday, September 11th, from the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. Three matches are already set. A six-pack challenge for the inaugural WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, Carmella, Naomi, Natalia, and Nikki Bella. So the same six that were in the six-man tag at SummerSlam will wrestle in a six-pack match for the inaugural SmackDown Women's Championship on September 11th in Richmond. Dean Ambrose will defend the WWE World Championship against AJ Styles. And I think AJ will win.
Me too.
And then there right now is a tag team tournament final, a tag team tournament to decide the inaugural SmackDown Tag Team Champions. I think you probably, one of the two teams will be American Alpha. You haven't seen them yet, have you? Have you seen American Alpha yet?
Yeah.
Jason Jordan and Gables?
I saw them at the show the other night.
Oh, that's right. I mean, have you seen more of them besides that?
Not really. Yeah, I think maybe once.
Keep watching them. Keep watching them. You'll like them. First of all, they wear red, white, and blue, so that's right up your alley anyway. But they're pretty awesome. So three matches are
SmackDown Tag Team Champions.
I don't know. They just says it. It just says WWE SmackDown Women's Championship, WWE SmackDown Tag. It just says that on Wikipedia. I don't know if they'll call anything else. But do they have a picture of the belt or no? Oh, they do. So it was revealed tonight. The women's SmackDown belt is going to look exactly like the Raw one. White leather, your logo, the WWE, same belt as Charlotte's, except the plate is blue instead of red. That's fine. Whatever. I'm not going to cry about that. Did they show off the SmackDown tag belts? Oh, they did. And they look exactly like the Raw ones, except JR. These are actually kind of cool looking. You said you liked the Raw tag belts, right?
Yeah.
They look exactly the same, except the leather is blue, and the plates are silver instead of, like, copper-colored. They're really cool. They're pretty neat. They unveiled them tonight. So, they're pretty badass looking. So, the quarterfinals started...
Oh, yeah, I looked it up.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like them too. So, the quarterfinals started on this week's episode. The Usos defeated the Ascension. See, I'm not jumping on their bandwagon again. And American Alpha defeated Breezango. So, the Usos and American Alpha will meet in one semifinal. And then there'll be more matches and more semifinals. And the tournament final will be on September 11th at Backlash. Raw's next pay-per-view is called Clash of Champions. So they got rid of Night of and called it Clash of, you know, kicking it old school again. That will be on Sunday night, September 25th, from the Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. So in terms of venue, Raw gets the bump because they're in a bigger place than Richmond. Then SmackDown will get the next pay-per-view, and that is called No Mercy. So they're bringing back one thing that I'm kind of enjoying, Dr. G, they're bringing back some of the old school, like, Attitude Era named pay-per-views, which I like. And that one's going to be on October 9th. That's a SmackDown one. It will be October 9th from the Golden One Center in Sacramento. And then the next Raw one in October will be Hell in a Cell, which will be on October 30th in Boston. So there you go.
Boston.
And then we'll have Survivor Series in November, which I think is in Toronto. I think it's in Toronto. Then
Reno.
And then in December, just to wrap up the year, December there's, I don't know if they're still going to call it TLC, but I know there's a pay-per-view scheduled for Pittsburgh in December. I don't know which brand it is. And then, of course, they'll add another one for the other brand. So, anyway, that's the rest of the 2016 pay-per-views. So, overall, Dr. G, fun weekend.
It was. It was good.
Brooklyn made money. SummerSlam is only slated. There's one more year. SummerSlam is slated for Barclays next summer as well. And then who knows after that. I don't know if they'll totally, because they seem to want to kind of keep the two shows, the two big shows, like SummerSlam and WrestleMania. They want to give each coast a fair shake. That's why last year when WrestleMania was in San Francisco.
Screw the West Coast.
To hell with them.
That's what I said.
So, because right now, we don't know where WrestleMania 34 is going to be in 2018. The new building in Minnesota where the Vikings play, US Bank Stadium, I think it's called, or whatever. US Bank Field. I don't know what the fuck it's called. But I think it's US Bank Stadium. Anyway, they are hosting. They're in the lead to host WrestleMania 34. Could be back in Philly, which would be kind of cool. First time since 1999, and if it's at the Link, then it'll be the trifecta of nice sports venues that host scumbag asshole teams. Anyway, so we'll see. But there you go. That was kind of the express main event, although we went longer than I thought we were going to, but still. Dr. G, always a pleasure. The pleasure was all mine.
All yours.
Yeah, where's my fucking Larry Land fucking roller coaster T-shirt? So this was kind of a surprise main event, but the next official main event will be it'll air, or it'll hit PlaceBNation.com Thursday, September 8th. We'll record it the night before. We will preview a Backlash, which will be that following Sunday from Richmond, Virginia. We'll have to get Nate Milton on because Nate's from that area. I wonder if the Godfather's going to go. Maybe I'll try and get Nate Milton from Clotheslines and Headlines on because he lives around there, so maybe he's going. But anyway, we'll see who will be on that episode. Of course, next week, JR and I will not be doing a Vintage Vault on Monday because I'll be flying back from Chicago and I probably will have like zero energy to do anything. So, but there will be an episode of Clotheslines and Headlines next week. And
that's really different from any other time?
And what? I don't think you said that, did you? And then the following Monday, we will be doing, we'll be back in the Vintage Vault for December to Dismember 2006. Welcome to that one. So, for the Doctor, I am Scott. You have been in the glorious main event. I hope you enjoy the weekend in Brooklyn. I will talk to you in 2 weeks when we preview Backlash.